This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row 1, Seat 1 podcast. This is Ben, a.k.a. Boston Nuga. We are coming off an exhausting yet wonderful Scenic City Invitational Week, and I couldn't think of a better guest to have on than Pete. You may know him from his podcast, Worldcast. This Week in Wrestling, Titans of Wrestling, you name the podcast, he's been on it. Pete, welcome to the show.
Thanks, man. It's an honor to be on this bad boy.
You got a lot more experience than me, so I think you'll be leading my blind ass around here. But no, Pete was with me through the whole thing, all Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday of it. Basically, my caretaker, calming me down when I was absolutely hammered. So I owe Pete an absolute debt of gratitude. But SCI was an experience, brother.
It totally was, man. It was amazing. I mean, I was so exhausted coming out of it. I flew out Monday, and I got there and had a long wait. So I couldn't sleep at the airport. But right when I got on the plane, I immediately fell asleep to the point where my body crunched over forward because in the aisle, and the stewardess had to pick my big ass up and leave me back in my seat, and then I was up the rest of the flight. Stuff. So I just completely drained out and just bam, right there.
There was not a night in like the 5-day span where I think I got more than 3 hours of sleep. Because sleep is for the week, man. Sleep is for the absolute week. We were just going, and it was, and we kept the days full and the nights were. We're crazy, and I can't reveal a lot of what happened there on the podcast for legal reasons, frankly. But we'll try to dance around some things. But it was a hell of a time. Scenic City Invitational. For those of you who are listening, if you want a fun experience where you get to bond with your fellow wrestling fans and get to hang out with wrestlers and get to go to amazing wrestling shows, I cannot suggest enough. As the mayor, I think I can say this. coming to Chattanooga, Tennessee, that first weekend in August, because it is the best weekend you'll have all year. It is one hell of a time, and it was proven again this year. Just unbelievable. Great wrestling, great fellowship, great wildness. It was a real good time. So let's walk through it, brother. You got all in right. On Wednesday.
Yes.
And Wednesday night we did a baseball game, and what did you think of the game?
I enjoyed it. I have minor league here in Austin, or actually it's called Round Rock, Texas. But I'm always enjoyed it. The game flew by. I had a beer or two. Had a brat. I was enjoying it. It was great. You know, especially because it separated the men from the boys because the real men got there on Wednesday, and.
Yeah, we had a crowd of about 12, 15 people who got there on Wednesday night who were just absolute maniacs.
Yes.
Shout out to John and Amber. Shout out to Brett. Shout out to Bad Take Justin. Papa Hales was there. Keith Harris, actually, from England, flew in on Monday. So I think he wins the week. Came in from England. Enjoyed America a little bit. Enjoyed his first baseball game, actually. Do you know that?
Oh, wow. Yeah, you mentioned that. That's neat.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was his first baseball game. I said, do you get the rules? And he goes, well, I kind of get part of them, but when they reach a certain score, is the game over? And I said, no, brother, this can go forever.
Yeah, and you got to see me get threatened by some minor league baseball player. I got the massive stare down. He would have fitted right in with, like, some of the wrestlers at Scenic City who were giving me shit.
Well, your voice only projects a little bit, my friend. So,
Only a little.
From there, we went to karaoke, and that was a time. That was absolutely a time. Bad Take Justin, Vic Venom Justin, he sang Man, I Feel Like a Woman, and that is on my Twitter, and it was a sight to behold.
And it wasn't even his top thing. I thought his best was when he hulked out at the baseball game.
Oh, that's true. He did take his shirt off at the funny moment.
Well, I don't know if that's good or bad, but I enjoyed it.
Funny moment. We there was a thing where they started playing Hulk Hogan's theme, I'm a Real American, in the in between innings, and Justin is the biggest Hulk Hogan fan on the planet. So we all just look at him, right? We all just, every eye falls upon him in our group. And he gets up and he starts hulking, and the camera's looking in the other end of the field, and we're all just kind of pointing, cameraman, over here, over here, over here. The cameraman finally gets over there. Your boy pops his shirt off, and the cameraman could not have panned away more quickly. Once this guy pops his shirt off, they wanted no business of that whatsoever.
The guy behind him's look that some of the guys on Twitter caught was class. It was classic. Great.
Guy behind him is like, what the hell is going on? This guy. I felt bad for the people around us.
I don't know if the guy was crying or thought he was seeing a train wreck or just Justin without the shirt.
Why not both? So then we went from there to karaoke. I broke out my James Brown impression. I do the greatest James Brown impression of any white man on the planet. I think it mortified some people as well. Justin did Man, I Feel Like a Woman. Papa Hales did some fantastic karaoke, actually. He broke out a Merle Haggard song. And John actually had signed up, but they got his name wrong, so he didn't actually get to do karaoke. But John's wife, Amber, is just so talented.
Isn't she?
Oh, my goodness.
That's a talented family.
That's a talented family. Couple. My God. Oh, my God. They are just two very talented people. And, like attracts like, clearly. And that's why I'm single, because I'm not talented whatsoever. But John and Amber are just two talented human beings. And she got up there and rocked the house. And we had a blast. We had an absolute blast. Brett came. And that was night zero, as I referred to it. And then
Ground zero.
Then Thursday came, and a lot of people started rolling in. That's when I started doing my airport runs and dragging you to the airport 35 times.
I wanted to come because I enjoy the joy of the anticipation of we can't find him, and then we find him.
I think
that's better because we actually knew everyone who we picked up.
This is true.
Wasn't any faces we've never seen before.
This is true. Unlike previous years where I'm like, what's a Kevin?
Yeah.
Thursday night, we went over to Crux Wrestling at the TWE Arena. Some of you guys might have seen it on IWTV on Thursday night. Real fun show. We got there a lot earlier than you guys started seeing it on IWTV because we were tailgating in the parking lot, already breaking into my first three cases of White Claw. Just for the record, I bought 15 cases of White Claw for the weekend, and they were bone dry by Friday night. So, for those people who think that wrestlers like White Claw, you guys are correct. And wrestling
or
fans.
Or it might be wrestling fans.
Wrestling fans like White Claw and wrestlers. It was everybody. Wrestlers and wrestling fans like White Claw.
I had one White Claw because they gave me a tummy ache, and I think y'all are crazy. But teach their own.
I had a few, but there was a point where at SCI Prom, which we will kind of discuss later, I brought up about two or three cases, went down for about 10 minutes, came up, and everything was gone. Just absolutely gone. So
then it's also, then again, when that's the only option to drink.
This is true.
That's had true. Alcohol in it.
This is true.
You do what you do when you do when you're in Rome, you wear a toga. Okay?
This is true. So we tailgated in the parking lot a good amount, and then everybody most of the people kind of showed up on Thursday for that Crux show or on Friday. So we had a good crowd at the Crux show. How do you think they drew? 125 or so?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was full from both sides of the ring and stuff. So
the thing with the TWE Arena, if you haven't been there in Chattanooga, it's a converted grocery store, and it's real custom made for wrestling. They've gutted it and made it into a really cool, kind of like an old, like a really old TV studio sort of place. Would you agree?
Yeah, I can buy that.
And
except bigger.
Bigger, yeah. Seats about 100, 125 people, maybe 150. Comfortable seats, padded seats. God bless America for that. And, you know, seats really on two sides of the ring. And it's an interesting place for wrestling, and it happens to be 15 minutes from my house, so I'm very, very blessed to have it.
Yeah, it almost felt like you were in a, I mean, if wrestling was allowed in church, it almost felt like you were in a church because of the padded seats. It felt like you were in a pew, and then the altar is the ring, and then, you know, but you had other sides of it stuff, and so, yeah, I mean, it was really interesting.
And Crux is a new promotion started by Kerry Offal from the Carnies, and they've run a couple shows, but this was, I think, they're pretty much their biggest show. And they had a fun time. They had a really fun time. They had some good matches. They had a Kiss My Foot match. They had a blindfold battle royal, which included Canadian Destroyers. I don't really know how tight those blindfolds were tied. The matches that stuck out for me, there were three. B-Boy and Chip Day, and we're going to talk about B-Boy in detail. But this was my first time seeing B-Boy live, and him and Chip Day brought it.
It was my favorite B-Boy match of the whole week.
Really?
So, and I thought they tore it up, and it was definitely my handful. I haven't really ranked like my top 10. I threw down my top three, but this clearly is going to be in my. I'm sure it's in my top 7 to 10 matches and stuff of the weekend.
Yeah, it was my number three. It was. I thought it was that good. B-Boy is. If you guys haven't seen B-Boy, God, he's been working since early 2000s. But if you haven't seen B-Boy recently or at all, what sticks out to me with B-Boy is he's so fundamentally sound, and everything matters. Every strike matters. Every movement matters. In a different way than someone like a Makabe, but yeah. In a I'm gonna beat your ass sort of way. Every little thing has impact,
and he has that aura in ring. Mm. I outside the ring, I would never be terrified of the guy because he seems like he was a super nice guy. But in the ring, he had that aura about him too, and the crowd just ate him up the whole entire weekend.
Another match that stuck out for me was the Fans Bring the Weapons match. Which was an absolute shit show.
Yeah.
It ended up being Kerry Offal and Righteous Jesse versus Uncle Biff and Matt Tremont. That was a goddamn spectacle. There was a walker. There was a pinata. There were light tubes. There were... God, what other...
There was the Titanic VHSs with thumbtacks in them.
Is this true?
Of course, the light bulbs. There was a jack, a car jack, or whatever they called it.
Yes.
It was like an old school jack. There was pans and dishes, skewers.
Yeah, Tremont and Uncle Biff took skewers.
Plenty of plunder.
Lots of plunder. They moved us out. And they just said, get the fuck out of your seats because you're all in danger. Like 10 rows back. Not even like the first two or three rows you're in danger. No. All 10 rows you're in danger. Just like move to the side because this match is going crazy.
Yes.
And then O'Shea Edwards and Uncle Biff had a good match. O'Shea kind of started his work this weekend. I was real impressed with O'Shea this weekend. He being up in Maryland, I think people are kind of sleeping on him a little bit for the last few months, but he came with his game face this weekend.
Yeah, he definitely upped his ante. I really enjoyed that a lot. I also like Jaden's and Sage Phillips match because it was totally different than absolutely everything else on this card.
Yeah, the whole card was really crazy and gaga, and then here was a technical wrestling match.
Yeah, I ached into the whole entire show. It felt very ECW-ish. All the way up to where there's a lot of versatility. So, everyone remembers, the Blood and Guts in ECW. But ECW would have, they did a lot of circusing. You'd have a totally over the top gimmick, like the blindfold battle royal. You'd have a great wrestling match, which struggled to get over because they followed a weapons match. You had like a hate filled fight with Chip. No, I wouldn't call it hate filled fight, but another great, just two of the top guys having a great match, kind of like
Peter.
Yeah, and then you had your freaking death match at the end, and to the point where we even got freaking the sup chant, which is straight out of Paul Heyman's ECW playbook. Drinking the Kool-Aid. I mean, it felt like ECW in Tennessee.
That's a really good analogy. I like that analogy a lot. And Kerry should be very proud. If and when Kerry hears this, I think Kerry will be very proud of that too, because I think it's what he's really trying to go for.
Yeah, because it had a little bit of, like, you know, I didn't like everything on the show, but I liked a lot of the show.
Yeah.
You know? And that's what wrestling should be. I feel if everything you loved, everything on the show, then it's just geared towards one type of fan. Well, if you liked a little bit of this, a little bit of this, a little of this, or if you have multiple people saying this was my favorite thing on the show, and you have a wide variety of opinions, that's when I think wrestling's at its best.
I agree. I definitely agree. Friday, I took some poor souls to boxing. You chose not to go. Why didn't you come boxing with us, Pete?
For many reasons. One, I don't need to prove that I'm tough. One, it had to do with limited packing. Two, I was on vacation. I have really no desire to break a sweat. The only sweat I was going to be sweating is walking up and down the stairs at the wrestling and being sweating by the pool. That was my only reason I was going to be sweating this weekend. I didn't want to be sore while I was watching wrestling. I'm here to enjoy myself. Doing physical stuff on my vacation sounded absolutely torturous. And some of the people who did it, it sounded like, Tim Livingston, for Christ's sake, sneezed and he was in pain. So I think I did the right decision. And I got to sleep in. So bonus points for the elder statesman of probably most of the group there.
I dragged poor Tim Livingston and a few other people out at 10 in the goddamn morning to my boxing gym. And I put them, and my coach put them through the ringer, just the absolute ringer. Put them through technique, put them through stations, put them through bag work, put them through mitt work. And Tim Livingston, I hope you're hearing this. You sweat through the top of your shirt, you sweat through he didn't just sweat through the bottom of his shirt, he sweated through his down to like past his shorts. He was so blown up, and I loved him. I loved him, and he was thankful for the opportunity, and he was just. I destroyed him. I was worried I'd killed the man.
And the result of all this, he wasn't able to stay up the whole entire night for SEI prom. So
I ruined him. I feel terrible.
So there you go. Moral of the story. You got to pick your battles, folks. And I decided to be an all-nighter trooper for SEI prom and not need to hit a punching bag. I felt very good.
We had some real good meals too. What was your favorite place to go to eat? Because this was a major accomplishment of mine was herding cats to a different restaurants, and we had some good groups too. But what was your favorite places to eat?
We didn't have a bad meal at all week. My favorite, gosh, it's so tough. I actually really was impressed with that Mexican restaurant.
The one we went to the Las Marlianas?
Yes.
Where we had the beer with the sauce on it?
Yeah, we had the Clamatos. We had two 32-ounce Clamatos with the salsa, margarita salt. And I got the burrito, which was the size of a plate or the size of my forearm. And it didn't skip on anything. It was meat. It was beef, chicken, and shrimp along with, your rice and everything. And it had so much of the proteins, it did not undervalue at all. And I'm from Texas, so for me to put thinking the Mexican food in Tennessee was top notch says a lot. And it was absolutely delicious.
Well, my thing came in a giant goblet. I don't know if you saw it. With about 35 pounds of meat on the thing.
Yeah, it looked like it's straight out of like Harry Potter making a freaking wishing an endless bowl of beef and food, and that's what you got on the menu, the Harry Potter special.
Chicken and chorizo and shrimp and beef and steak, and it was so good. But it was literally like, got to have been 10 pounds of food. It was just...
Oh, yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, it looked like it's out... It's like, I don't know what type of animals they did this to. Yeah. I mean, it was just a smorgasbord. It's almost... It was like... going to one of those Brazilian steakhouses, and they, instead of them coming out and cutting it for you tableside, they did it all in the back and shoved it in this freaking mesa bowl to give it the real Mexican flavor to it. But they just chopped all this meat and just shoved it into this bowl.
My as mistake much as they was could. I told them to make it spicy, so they dumped their hottest salsa on all the meat.
Ugh.
So like, I'm like sweating through my eyeballs eating all this sort of stuff. It was insane.
Okay, I'm glad now. I was going to steal a bite on the way out.
Nope, hard pass.
But I did not, so I'm glad, because I like spice, but it can get to me.
No, hard pass. I was, my toes were sweating. It was ridiculous. But I love spicy food, but that was a lot. That was an absolute lot. So then Friday we went to Scenic City Invitational Night 1. It was a good show, real good show.
Strong show.
What were some of the matches that stuck out for you?
Of course, it was Makabe and Deppin, for sure.
Unbelievable.
Really stood out for me. I thought that was the match of the night. That thing is a stone cold classic, akin to mat wrestling. It's up there with some of the... Dan's had one hell of a year. Deppin has gotten hot really quickly, really, really fast, too. And so both of these guys, it's something both of them should have on their resumes and rather than show promoters on their tape on what they can do.
Deppin's the most versatile guy in the indies to me.
Yeah, that's a very fair statement. I could buy that because a guy can do brawls, he can do high flying, he can mat wrestle. He can also do zany because the guy looks like his eyes are bulging out of his body and he has that nose that... It's really it adds a lot of character to his face, and so it allows. I mean, people with large faces, people don't realize how awesome it is to be in the wrestling business when you have these like unique features that really help you stand out in the wrestling business, and he gives Deppin a unique look that not a lot of people have. And same with Dan. Dan has that really long face that he's able to do these incredible facials and stuff when he's working in the ring. That one really stood out to me. The main event was really was good, especially the way the angle played out post match. It felt like something straight out of Nitro when Lynch and Drake are putting the boots to. It almost felt like the NWO kind of putting the boots to like Sting and Flair, and,
like that
or
analogy.
Sting and Luger or what have you, the horse. But it felt, and then because of, and you know what, they made everything work because of the snafus, they just made it seem larger than life. Or I still haven't watched it back on independent TV, but I plan on it because it's such a the angle. It doesn't play well in the building. It played probably better live than it did. In the building, but it felt like a big time moment and built a lot of heat to the tag match, which was setting up a tag match with Drake and Anthony Henry, who I honestly think are really the best tag team in wrestling right now, and because they're so everyone for me a lot of wrestling tag teams nowadays are very 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 similar. Henry and Drake have completely different styles, but it meshes and it works and allows them, it gives them a really great shelf life where they're able to, because they're so different, they can also go into a territory and be a tag team, kind of like all in the old Houston days where Gino and Tully were, because they're both top guys, but they're in a tag team, they can be a tag team, but they can also do separate feuds and then bring it back to tag team. So I mean, there's so many interesting things you can do with this team. And then, of course, you had the local Lynch brothers, the Lynch Mob, and they the next night. I mean, it led to this big, great match that they guys had a night too. So the angle was just fantastic, and I can't put over James Drake enough when the crowd in the main event was, it was Lynch and Henry, and they wanted five more minutes because they went to a draw. And I mean,
he squashed that real fast.
Yeah, and Drake just did this human cannonball in the corner to shut down, because obviously that clearly was not in the booking plans, because we've known they've had the scramble winner in their back pocket for, I think, 3 years now, maybe even 4 years. So they've been having that thing sitting there on the table waiting for it. Yeah, so I knew there wasn't going to be no 5 minutes, and the timing on Drake just shutting down the crowd was fantastic. So with that, it was a great moment. But yeah, those are two of the things that really stood out to me. I love Marco. There's a lot of interesting stuff. What about you?
I like B-Boy Slim J. I thought that was a hell of a match.
I liked that a lot too.
Two veterans just going at it. Just a lot of respect in that match. A lot of guys, you know, East Coast versus West Coast sort of thing. Two guys who've been at it for ages and ages and ages. You know, people slept on them a lot, and just going out there and having an absolute banger. I liked J.D. Drake versus O'Shea Edwards, because you just had a big old hoss fight, just two big dudes just beating the crap out of each other. And they, when they made power moves, they mattered. You know, it's not, you know, not big dudes doing flips and hurricane runners and bullshit like that. You know, when one of them lands a clothesline, everyone in the crowd felt it. And it was a very, that's another thing I want to talk about. You know, obviously there's the Twitter crowd there. You know, we probably had, you know, what, 7,500 people from, you know, the Twitter universe, and God bless them, and they're all my friends, and I love them all. But the locals got the subtleties of wrestling. And you always worry about that sometimes. But the locals were into the Makabe match. The locals were into the subtleties of the O'Shea Edwards-JD Drake match. The locals were into a lot. They were a very smart crowd for people from Saudi, Tennessee, who everyone kind of shits on as, you know, Southern wrestling fans, and you got to spell it out for them. You didn't have to spell it out for them.
Yeah. The other thing that's really cool was there was a lot of variety in the match. Mm-hmm. In the matches. I mean, you had, like you talked about, the Haas fight. Then we had Slim J and B-Boy, which is kind of a battle of the veterans. You had Dan and Deppin having an absolute mat classic. You had Ison and Tremont, you know, like kind of a weapons, like type of weapons heavy brawl. You know, so you got a little bit of every, you got a little taste of this, little taste of that. And then, yeah, I mean, you know, so you just, and there were so many great storylines going on, especially if you've been paying attention to action and to Scenic City and stuff. You had, you know, how you got Matt Griffin involved in a finish that I've heard people complain about it. And a lot of people come to me, they didn't understand it. But if you watched action, you would have understood it.
Yeah.
You have
Brett Ison as the sub champ and really trying to prove himself against Matt Tremont. And he didn't end up winning, but he's apologizing to the crowd, you know, because if you followed his storyline, this is his, you know, this is his thing that he's really trying to, you know, come up. It was an emotional moment for people who followed Sup and followed him through all the little, you know, all the groups that he's worked around here. Yeah, it's, you know.
And then you have Jaden as the hometown boy, mm-hmm. who earned his spot into the Rumble. And yeah, I mean, from the Rumble, and then with his great showing against Warhorse. And then you match him and AC Mac. And of course, you know, AC Mac backed his way into it. And so he's coming in with like a ton of heat. I mean, there's just a lot of moving balls and a lot of moving parts here. And the storytelling, I thought, was really, really top-notch from the booking standpoint. There was some things I love the show. I really like the show. So, but there was like some small things for me, like in like the Tremont Ison match. I wish we would announce that this was a no, you know, give me a reason why they're using chairs and stuff on the tap out in the coup match. I felt the strikes were need to be a little more hurt. Look, make them look a little more tighter. They just for that finish to work. I already talked about the finish on with Billy and Marco and Matt Griffin, how some people didn't really understand that.
I thought the name was a little telegraphed too, but you know, yeah, I mean, and it was still a good match, but it was telegraphed.
I felt it was really telegraphed. Like, I turned to Johnny P, or no, my buddy JB, and I'm like, yeah, there, I feel it going to a draw. Because one of the things for me that stood out was Anthony Henry's usually not a guy who stalls too much. He's a great, really strong worker, really great worker. For me, when he started stalling a little bit, I'm like, okay, this feels like they're working to the draw. But the payoff to it worked tremendously, yeah. and they have a history there. So it was really a storyline dictated match, and it still worked, though.
Yeah, definitely. So it was a good show, and then Friday night was prom, and that's all we'll say about that. No, just kidding. How do we describe the SCI prom, Pete, without getting ourselves into trouble?
It a shit show.
All right, let me. For those of you, some of you have seen some clips online. It turned into essentially a karaoke show, where everyone's just going buck wild. And not like buck wild in like illegal ways. I'm joking about that. Everyone's having a good time and everyone's drinking. Everyone's, you know, everyone's bonding and having a wonderful time. And everyone's just coming down off the show. And it was just a good sense of camaraderie and brotherhood. And, you know, obviously people have seen the clips where, you know, people are taking chops and stuff like that. And, you know, there was a lot of chopping going on. And that was pretty crazy. You know, everyone's lining up to take chops in the middle of, you know, someone singing, you know, a Journey song. That's that's something you don't see every day.
Yeah.
But you know, it's just everyone kind of sitting around and getting to know each other, and you know, someone wailing away on the microphone in a song. I sang a little David Allan Coe. It's the only country song I know. I got champagne drunk. I got freshman year drunk, basically, is what I got, which was, I woke up Saturday morning and I could smell the alcohol sweating through my pores, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm freshman year drunk. This is just so bad. I'm glad I got an Uber. It was just like, everyone just like tied it on, and it was, you know, it was, we all went to like 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, just hanging out in people's rooms and shooting the shit and talking wrestling. And if that's the sort of thing that appeals to you, even if you're not a drinker, there were people in there who weren't drinking, you know, and just, but if you're the type who just wants to stay up till 4 or 5 in the morning and talk with your friends and shoot the shit about wrestling and all that sort of stuff, then SCI, you know, could be a lot of fun for you, because that's going to be the thing you're going to do. You're going to be underslept and you're going to make 50 new friends. And SCI prom is the wildest part of that. And if you can sing, even better.
Yeah, I don't sing.
Yeah.
But I mean, I definitely drank. I'd call myself a functioning alcoholic, because back in the day I used to drink and drink and drink. I don't drink like that anymore. But for the special occasions, I will bust out that skill. And for SCI prom, I easily had, to start the day, I had probably 6 or 7 beers at the pool before we even went to anywhere. Then at dinner, I had 2 of those 32-ounce Micheladas. And then at those the prom, strong. I had 14 beers. and I was just chilling. And for me, I was more people watching. And I'm just watching and having a blast, just people watching for 3 or 4 hours. I'd shoot the shit with some people here and there. But for the most part, I was just drinking my beer and just loving life, sucking it all. Just sucking it all in, and like, yeah, this is fun. And just watching people chop each other or doing a Thez pressed onto a blindfold man. that was awesome. Watching people dance and sing bad karaoke. People somehow showing up in their underwear at some points. And almost crossing swords, but not quite.
No, God. Say no more.
I'm not naming names.
We're not naming names. This is true. We're not naming names.
So
it got weird, man. It got real weird.
You guys can take that and use your imagination. But it was fun. And I got to say, I felt the wrestlers this year participated in it and didn't stop till the mornings also. They were all in. I think in the past there'd be a group they were all in, but some of them weren't all in. This year seemed like almost all everybody was all in.
Yeah, the wrestlers were real cool. No one was too cool for school, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, everyone was just, you know, everyone got it. And everyone wanted to be part of the group, and everyone was all in with it. So that was really fun, really tiring, though, and it was a lot. To the point where most of us woke up too late for Tank shooting thing on Saturday morning. I know I did, which I felt terrible about, but it just there was just no way I was getting up at 11 a.m. Not in the state I was in. But
no, apparently. I mean, that's the key to being a functioning alcoholic. Yeah. You sleep it off. So you can function the next day, and that's what I did.
Apparently that was very fun, though. Apparently Tank's thing was great. He told some great stories, and he shot on some shitbirds. And
there we go.
Tank will be on this podcast shooting on shitbirds at some point soon over the summer, and we'll have a good time with that. But he definitely shot on some shitbirds there. And then Futures was at 2 o'clock.
Yep.
That was a real fun show, way better than it had any right to be.
I thought it smoked last year's future show. I mean, nothing topped the moment with Marco last year, okay, yeah. Winning it all. But the wrestling, top to bottom, I thought kicked the living shit out of last year's future show. And we got some guys you should keep an eye out for. The guy who ended up winning it all.
Manders.
Manders has a look about him, has a feel about him. He feels like even outside the ring, he almost like lives the gimmick, like he really is an Iowa cowboy. And because he probably is a freaking really Iowa cowboy.
You know, he drives around with his cowboy hat on. Like he pulled up in the parking lot with his cowboy hat on.
He had overalls on at the prom.
God bless that man.
Ugly overalls, but you know what? They were Iowa overalls. But yeah, and he got over huge, and they had a match that I had in my top three
the opener
of the whole weekend. So it was my third favorite match of the weekend, which is the Haas fight between that was what Zach Cooper,
Big Beef, Gnarls Garvin.
See, I always call him Jake Garvin. Jake Garvin,
yeah. His Twitter is Gnarls Garvin. Yeah, he's Jake Garvin, I think is his name. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, I know him. I've seen him work in ACW here in Austin, Texas, and he was always one of the best guys on that show.
He's got like a John Nord, Otis Dozovic charisma.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. That's a good. The Dozovic one I really, really buy into. And anyone with the name Jake and last name Garvin sounds like somebody wrestled in the 80s. So I already have a fond eye. I already have a fond ear for that name. And then, of course, the man they call Manders. They just had, I don't know, it looked like they were just stiffing the living shit out of each other. They were just beating on each other.
And these guys are three refrigerators of human beings, too.
And lost it. Freaking Cooper got over because he's taking these killer bumps in them. You know, because he was kind of the foil there because he's the Canadian. He was the true heel in the group, you know? So he got over by making these guys look good and by taking some freaking killer bumps for them. And but still, when the time came for it, he'd punch him right in the mush. they all got over in different, kind of differently, kind of the same. But my gosh, and you know what? In 2019, having a true Haas fight where you're not pulling out weapons and this and that, or a chair, or a bunch of weapons, it's really hard to do. But these guys did it because they portrayed that they're Haases. You believe that you made the crowd believe that they're Haases, and they punch you right in the face. And I'll tell you, the punch is a lost art. And these guys were punching the snout out of each other and throwing stiff forearms. And God bless them, all three of them, even the Canadian.
Manders is like a really baby Stan Hansen to me.
He has a cross. I crossed him. He's like, you know, it almost felt like I was watching Dr. Death Steve Williams versus Terry Gordy, but you know, smaller, of course. Mm-hmm. But for now, in 2019, these guys are big, big boys.
Yeah.
And then again, I don't know what quite to call Cooper. But I'll get to it at some point. But go on. I'm sorry.
He has like Ethan Page / Walter comparisons.
Yeah, okay.
And I can see both of those in him. But good Ethan Page. Like when Ethan Page is on.
I can see that.
Yeah. Other good matches there. Kane put on a pretty good show.
Enjoying it.
With Allen Angels. That was a good quality match.
Yeah.
Kane Justice. Logan Stunt was there. Had a match with Sage Phillips. That was pretty good.
Solid stuff.
Ben Carter won with Kevin Giza and James Bandy. And then Bobby Flacco won his opener with Lutha X and Damian Tangra, who I hadn't seen before, but
Ben Carter got over great at night one, and he was the first one eliminated out of the blindfold battle royal when he did a shooting star and just missed it completely, and then got tossed.
He's very bouncy.
That was a great comedy spot.
He's very bouncy to me. He just he flies everywhere. He can do all this crazy stuff off the top ropes. He needs to calm down a little bit.
Needs to learn to fill time on the little stuff in between. Mm-hmm. He's great at, has a great look. Yeah, I mean, he should be eventually has the potential to be a top type of babyface type of guy or a top, top babyface in any promotion. The guy can fly, but yeah, he needs to work on the fundamentals on the in-between type of stuff. How to fill time with not just being spotty, maybe, learn how to do some tricks by working an arm or a leg. Sometimes some of the stuff seemed a little set up-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And, this is why it's called the Futures Tournament. We're not expecting, I'm not expecting Rey Mysterio transitions from the guy. So I'm not going in there with as critical eye as I'm saying I'm going to watch Dan and Depp and do a classic match and stuff when those two are both polished. This is what the Futures is about.
And the finals was Manders and Ben Carter and Bobby Flacco, and that was like Godzilla swatting the airplanes from the sky.
Yep. That would be King Kong.
Yeah, King Kong. I'm sorry. Yeah, King Kong. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah.
Empire State Building. Sure. That's just who cares?
Get the analogy. You get the analogy.
Of course, we can't be. We got the mystery tag. I mean, the surprise tag match.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What was that? Oh my God, we got to talk about that. I forgot that it was on Futures. I thought it was on night two. Let me talk for a second about my new favorite young tag team, IFHY. They were here. It was either last year or the year before, and I don't want to say they stunk the joint up, but they didn't. They were kind of meh, right?
They didn't get over.
They didn't get over. They tried real hard. They had a match. But they didn't, for the amount that they, you could tell they were trying real hard, but they just had a match. And
they also had a really good match on, at Crux.
Oh, that was the other match I want to talk about at Crux too. They had a banger at Crux with the Smoking Butts.
Yeah.
Where they just died for our sins.
My only problem with that match was both of them came across as baby faces. So it was kind of a tough to work it. It wouldn't work better. I'm sure the Smoking Butts are baby faces. And especially here with the crowd there who was there, but maybe in somewhere else in Tennessee they would have been heels, so the dynamic would have worked better. But other than that, I mean, work wise it was great. It was just the psychology was hampered because of not having a true heel in that match.
But IFHY has gotten so much better. They know their roles, and that Jonathan Wolf kid, he has got oodles of potential. He's out there trying to kill himself, but he also has the mat wrestling down. He also has the wrestling part down, but he has some crazy spots. He had a dive off the top rope onto the chairs that was really cool looking, but really fucking crazy.
Yeah.
He's got the world ahead of him. And Sean Kemp is a good tag team partner. They work well together. But Wolf was my, maybe even more so than Manders, was my up-and-coming kid I want to watch.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think he's a little bit more ready than Manders. But I think Manders' upside is a lot more than Jonathan Wolf's.
That's a possibility.
I think Jonathan Wolf is a good worker. I think he could be a good worker on any card he goes into. I'm just not sure. I think Sean Kemp brings the personality for that team. I think fundamentally the guy is good. But you know what? Eddie Guerrero at one point was just a really good hand. And that's what Wolf to me right now is, a really good hand in the ring. Has some great spots, but I don't know if he right now has that personality. But you know what? It takes, you know, sometimes people's, you know, charisma, the it factor is something you're born with. You either have it or you don't. But you can do, you can create, you can learn how to do, be charismatic and be, and have an aura about yourself. And I just think right now he doesn't quite have that, but okay, he could grow into it.
Sure, sure. And Manders, to his credit, has it.
Yeah, he has it.
He has it.
I mean,
he,
I charisma. Mean, I was telling him, I'm like, yeah, the chaps in the, I mean, he comes out like Stan Hansen, and in today's environment, you know, I don't know how many people have seen Stan Hansen work. So to me, it's, you're, God bless him, because it's a, to me, it's a fresh gimmick to a lot of people, because I don't think a lot of people in today's wrestling, especially in indie wrestling, have seen Stan Hansen on a regular basis, or more than less. I bet most of them have seen Stan Hansen less than 10 times, and I bet you a lot of them, they don't remember the whole entire Stan Hansen aura and gimmick about them.
So night two, Scenic City, we went to after that, and that has show of the year potential to me. That might be up there with indie shows of the year. I think the show was
I would make that argument. There's, let me get my negative things off the sure. off my chest first, okay? Wrestling, okay, let me say, I loved every finish. All the finishes I thought were fantastic night two. I didn't like Lynch. I didn't like Drake and Anthony Henry after being these scalding, big-ass, kicking heels, being the biggest, baddest heels that they possibly could, then try to turn babyface that post-match after this wild, great fight with the Lynch mob. That didn't work for me.
That's fair.
But I will say, maybe if they're going somewhere with it, and the story makes, I'm always saying, well, maybe they have something planned that I don't, not as a fan, I'm not inclined to know what it is quite yet. But I don't know where it's going. If that's the case, and I always think the audience should have an eye. Not, it doesn't have to be black and white, but they should kind of know, have a feel, a vibe on where it's going. And here I have no idea where they're going with that.
But that match was a banger, though.
But the match was incredible. I was utterly confused when Nick Iggy was working heel the night before, and now he's working in a babyface match. And then at the end, they turned babyface because I guess he was one of Carrie's students. So I had a lot of people have to explain to me what happened, and I think part of it was injuries and having to redo stuff in the back. So those are a couple of little things that would keep it for me that were my negative. Those are, I mean, not big hardcore negative things to say, but I thought. And my only other small, this is like the smallest thing I could find an issue with, was I loved how they played up Marco's injury. I wouldn't have gone back-to-back matches with a tapping out with injury, a leg injury is playing into it. But you know what? In a shoot on a UFC or something, that easily could happen. So sure. It didn't like rigorously bother me, but I would rather separate it a little bit here and there. But other than that, I mean, the show was absolutely incredible. The way the final ended up being laid out and finished, it wasn't like this incredible like work rate match, but when it comes to storytelling, I would give the whole entire match 5 stars. And if it was, really? And this for me as an old school wrestling fan, this is like the biggest compliment I can give to somebody, would be if this was happening in the 80s in any territory, and or say it was the UWF booking of the finals for the UWF tournament, it would be on the best of Death Valley Driver's 80 set, UWF Mid-South set. That's how great that finish was. I mean, I feel like I'm. We'll get to it. Why don't we start from where you want to go.
Start with the scrim. But what I liked about night two a lot too was the surprises. And you get two surprises in the start, where you get Dominic Guarini, and then you got Jake Parnell. And Jake looks great. He's got new gear. His body's really toned up. He's working. I love the intensity that Jake Parnell works with. He is in 6th gear all the time, and it works for his character. And Dominic Guarini is having a fantastic year. You have Matt Sells in that match. You have
Mandy
in that
match. And speaking of guys shredding weight, Dom looked like he looked like in the best shape I've seen him in since I've seen him wrestling.
Dom looks great, too. Dom's killing it. Yeah, Dom's having a great year, too, man. I think it was might have actually been Tim who said Dom might be his number one wrestler of the year right now. And
okay.
He's, you know, it's, Tim knows his wrestling, man.
Yeah.
And Dom's having a great year, and Dom looked really good here, too. And just fun little scramble. And then, obviously, the winner of the scramble, there's stakes here because they get into the tournament, and Jake Parnell ends up winning it. You have...
and then the cool thing about that was also, like, once Warhorse was there, then it felt like Warhorse was going to win it. But they did a great job of teasing. They teased a little bit of dissension with Dom and Koo at the tag at the Futures, where Koo was kind of, I don't want to say yelling at Dom, but kind of telling Dom what to do. Like, Dom was like the hired muscle in a way.
Sure.
And you're like, okay, maybe we'll get Koo and Dom. Dom winning it, and so that was a great little layer. One, a nice little booking tease, and a great way to keep things like off balance, where you wouldn't be able to pick between the two, really. Or Manders is in it because he just won the Futures. You think maybe, you know, and then then it sets up other storytelling with Kevin, with Warhorse, who was in the finals last year. Will he finally do it? He wasn't in the finals last year, but he was one away from the finals, and now he does the scramble. And to get to the finals, he's going to have to, and win it all, he's got to win, like, what, three or four matches. So there's another whole story arc going there, which was fantastic.
Makabe and Slim J had a classic.
Really strong match. Really strong. Definitely might want to be, it will be on my top 10 list, I'm sure.
Tremont and O'Shea had, it was short, but it was exactly what you wanted it to be from those guys. It started up in the stands. They just started fighting each other. It went 3 minutes, but it was impactful 3 minutes.
Yes. It felt larger than life. Tremont has the aura. So does O'Shea. So I don't... both guys have auras. But Tremont has been around the block, you know? So that aura... O'Shea's just building his aura. While it almost felt like the new gunslinger versus the old gunslinger. And the best thing was, it reminded me of, there's a famous picture of from St. Louis Wrestling with Bruiser Brody holding a lady up on top of the Checker Dome, I believe it is. And that's kind of how it felt like, Tremont starting all the way up there and looking down at everyone. And it felt like he was like the gorilla on top of the building. And O'Shea going up there to meet him. It had an urgency to it, and it was brilliantly executed.
And then Koo and Parnell was second round, right?
Yes.
I really liked that match.
So did I.
Yeah.
It was a big old battle, and it was almost like, who's the toughest guy on the block, in a way? It had that... kind of had like that Ishii type of vibe to it, like when Ishii has his big time matches, and it worked here for these guys, and they're about the same height and build, so they're able to just beat the living tar out of each other. That's what they did here, but the difference is, like, when Warhorse worked O'Shea and was doing some of the same spots, instead of trading every single time, old Warhorse went down. And that was brilliant there. But we'll talk about the main event later.
Well, we'll get to the main event now, actually. The main event was... and then AC Mack beat Marco. AC Mack was dastardly the whole time and went everything with groin kicks and just...
maybe. And Marco playing up the bad leg that he had injured and come back from surgery on.
Marco, I mean...
And AC's character work in this whole entire show, which, again, he was the glue. I mean, the angle wouldn't have played off as well without having this heat magnet of a guy in it. And it was the best, I feel. Like, I love I love action. I love AC Mack. So my only complaint about AC Mack sometimes in some of his title events is that he doesn't get his ass kicked enough because he's, like, the massive heel, and he should get his ass kicked, handed to him. And then Banana Peel finishes a lot. Here, he got his ass kicked and ran and cowered and then again, he's coming to this tournament. Lucky he's in it because he backdoored into the freaking winning the Rumble. And then what happens? Marco's injury happens here. And
he kicks Jaden in the nuts, so, and
he kind of squeaks back. He squeaks into the finals because of that, and it's like, ugh. So you just he had so much. They poured so he had so much gasoline on him. It man, and then it makes the main event angle work. And if you didn't have a hot heel in there, it could have been a like wet fart. It could have been a fart in the church of wrestling. But because of how hot Mac was, it made the payoff so sweet.
And then one thing that happened, just to kind of to prelude to the finals, in the Makabe Slim J match, Dan ripped his ear nearly off, and it's bleeding profusely, and it looks real gross. And it actually made the final a little bit better, but it's a he had a really gross looking injury, and it was a real ear injury. It was legitimate.
They would have if he was there. If he wasn't injured, they probably would have gone to like a work rate type of still heavy storytelling, I'm sure. But there would have been a lot more work involved. But the story that we ended up getting was just incredible.
Yeah. So we get to the finals. O'Shea and Jake Parnell just.
Oh, hey, can I interrupt real quick?
Go ahead. Yeah, please.
One other
thing
that I thought was awesome about Dan coming out in night two is that he has his leg taped up from Deppin working it all over in night one. So I thought that was an excellent, just a small little touch because they're, you know, you're kind of, you know, coming in, he the hardcore guys knew him, but he was called to Tennessee and the Saudi Daisy, and their little thing like the bring coming out, you know, getting this guy you don't quite know, got over night one. Oh, now he's injured. Let's see how he does there. And he comes out with that bandaged knee. And I thought it was a fantastic touch to put sympathy on the character.
Very Tennessee.
Yep.
And then his ear legitimately rips open.
Yes.
And bleeding all over the place. It just looks disgusting. And then, so then you have the finals with Makabe, AC Mack, O'Shea, and Jake Parnell. And Jake and O'Shea come out. Makabe comes out, and AC Mack hits him right in the ear. They walk Makabe to the back. And we're all thinking, well, it's legitimate because Makabe's ear is genuinely fucked up. So they snowed me, and because I'm thinking, oh, his ear is really bad. So O'Shea and Jake hit their finishers on Mac, and Mac gets out of the ring, and then O'Shea and Jake start, you know, have a really good
match. Well, the best part was, I thought was lovely, was AC Mac doing cat and mouse and just running all over the arena from Warhorse and O'Shea and making him, of course, look like the world's biggest pussy. It was great. And I think that makes it even more. Because, again, this guy has backdoored his way in to freaking everything. He hadn't earned dick on this freaking thing. And then, of course, he's got to... I would be running from O'Shea Edwards anyway. And I would be in Warhorse as an intense dude. And I love the fact that he's running. And finally, a payoff also early on is he beat Jaden in the first round and had been bad-mouthing Jaden and Marco, both guys he had like had feuds with, and they get to drag his ass to the ring to where O'Shea and Warhorse now go, where you are, Ben. The storytelling here is with Picasso brushes, and I'm trying to make sure everyone understands the excitement of this, and not everything has got to be. That's what's the problem with people nowadays. It's everything so fast, and things pop up on the internet so quick. Sometimes you don't have time to digest full shows, so you miss the subtleties of stuff like this. And you're just more interested in hearing, oh, I heard there's like this 4.5-star match. I'm just going to watch that. But you miss why it's a 4.5-star. Yeah. Here, this is legitimate for me, a 5-star match. Because of all the storytelling elements, it's freaking
gumbo
here. I'm having a big scooping wad of gumbo, and it's tasting fantastic because it's all paying off story beats. And go on.
It's context.
Yes.
So they get in. O'Shea and Jake beat the crap out of each other. Jake has to hit 3 double stomps on O'Shea to pin him. So you're keeping O'Shea strong.
And these guys, I love the fact, I said it earlier, when they were chopping each other, O'Shea, you know, would stand tall because he legitimately is built like a brick shit house. And then you have freaking Warhorse, who is a hard hitter, but he's not built like a brick shit house. And he's And every time O'Shea hits him, bump. Oh, clothesline, bump. Oh, you're thinking, everyone's either teasing it. We think we're going to get a big old chop exchange. Nope. O'Shea puts him down in one. It was brilliant. Brilliantly worked and so smart.
So then Parnell ends up pinning O'Shea. AC Mack comes in. He kicks him in the groin, right?
O'Shea gets picked first. And then he kicks him and rolls him up or whatever.
It rolls him up. So AC Mack's like, I won. Celebrating.
And the crowd's going, no, boo, boo, boo. And then they milk it. And milk it. And who comes out of the curtain?
Conquering hero.
The newest baby, biggest baby face now in Tennessee. And since the Armstrongs come out. And who is it?
Daniel goddamn Makabe.
God bless him. Comes out.
And there wasn't, what I liked about this too, right? Makabe comes out, and there's not a back and forth with AC Mack. They didn't go toe to toe. They didn't have an exchange. Makabe just didn't be, like, Makabe just got him in the most painful looking submissions for a 2 minute span. And one of them didn't hurt enough, so he put another one on him. One of them didn't hurt enough, so he put another one on him until.
Rain down elbows.
Like the cattle mutilation, just then put another submission on, then a cattle mutilation. And it was brilliant because he's torturing
this. 1980, though, I will say, AC Mack, and they can't do this in a high school gymnasium. He would have bladed for a bloody ass visual finish. And that was my only knock, but it's not a knock because it's not something you should have done.
Yeah. But, yeah, we couldn't have done that. But Makabe looks strong, ends up winning.
Running down the elbows, and then it looks like Mack's about to escape. He squeaks for a sec, but then comes cattle mutilation, and it's all she wrote. Taps out, baby fan, like Jim Cornette would say, and then the fans erupted. The baby got thrown up in the air. Baby's being thrown up in the air. Let me see. I'm jumping up and down. I'm going bananas. Matt Griffin comes up. He goes, Pete, man, can you please move to the left? And I turn, and Joey Lynch is coming in the ring with the trophy, and I completely got caught up in the moment and almost ruined the moment. Luckily, it didn't get caught on independent TV, so thank you. I didn't ruin this moment of pure joy, let me tell you.
I'm just proud because I was the first person that Dan handed the trophy to was me, so.
Mayor, who else? The mayor of Tennessee. The only bigger pop would have been if you came out of the audience tapped out AC. That's the only other way I can see it happen.
So that was a hell of a time. Then goes on to Saturday night. Saturday night was a little tamer. We were still up till 5 in the morning, but a little more chill. Do you want to talk about the wing eating contest? Because that was probably the funniest part of my weekend.
Yeah, I will. I'm not gonna say it was the funniest for me, but I thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yeah, if you guys get a chance, if it gets on IWTV, look up the wing eating contest where Daniel Makabe, Jaden Newman, O'Shea Edwards, and Nick Iggy eat wings of 10 different hotness levels. And it was
the
all
thing that
filmed.
Caught me the most was when O'Shea was burning up and you couldn't understand what he was saying. And Iggy got in there and translated for him. But there were so many great moments in that whole thing.
The whole wing eating contest. They're all just cutting promo. It was unbelievable. It was just I got so much joy out of it.
Yes.
So much joy out of it. And that was also the night an elderly man challenged me to a fight. That's all we'll say about that. And we will go on to Sunday. We went to SUP on Sunday. We drove up to Nashville. That was a fun little show.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I definitely enjoyed it. It started off kind of weird because Zach Cooper, I think it was a shoulder separation in the first match with Dom Greeny. So I think it kind of killed the vibe a little bit early in the show just because everyone was genuinely concerned.
Yeah, I missed it because at that point, we went to, where did we go for barbecue, which is really good?
Edley's.
So I had a combination of Edley's and all the booze from the night before. Yeah, and I missed the first two matches because I was tearing apart the toilet there.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm keeping that in.
That's a little, that's a That's exclusive here for you.
I'm not editing that out at all, actually. We had Cabana Mandan and Marco Stunt in a really emotional match. Cabana Mandan, Marco Stunt gave a speech at the end of his match. Because Marco came up in SUP. That was where he was discovered and blew up. And SUP is his home. And he is thankful for that and realizes that. And left his fanny pack in the ring. And there were people tearing up, man. Like, that was a moment.
Yeah, it was a fun match. I got to say thanks for not insulting our intelligence by Marco having an injury at SCI, and then all of a sudden it's not there, but here they still teased his injury. I've been at places, like, I remember a couple of manias back where Matt Riddle had a big injury angle, and he would be okay. He'd sell the injury angle at the Evolve shows, but in the same building on the same day, he would be at Progress, and the injury wasn't there. And I was like, come on, man. It's like, there's not an alternate reality here. This isn't Elseworlds we're talking about on the CW. This is, you're in the same building. So I appreciated them addressing it, or, you know, giving credence to it and not shit canning it. And also, what I also liked about it was we got some fun comedy spots in it. But you know what? That's the thing is, people thought, sometimes think about me, that I don't like is like comedy and wrestling. That's not the case. I just want my comedy to be dressed up with wrestling, where wrestling is still the backstory, but they had some really fun comedy spots there.
Yeah. And it's Cabana Mandan versus Marco Stunt, you know?
Yeah.
It's not, you know, it's both those guys are 5'2", you know?
Yeah.
It's not going to be.
Exactly.
It's not going to be, you know, a hoss fight. So, I mean, it was a perfect setting for that particular match. We saw the craziest spot of the weekend, in my opinion, at that show, where Alex Zane, who was actually on night two as well and is shooting up the ranks as one of my favorite wrestlers on the planet.
Yeah.
Dove headfirst into a flying trash barrel. And I turned to D and I said, I'm Johnny Knoxville. Welcome to Jackass.
Same garbage can that our buddy Eddie Eduardo, far from heaven, took a bump for Craig Mitchell into.
That trash can got a lot of work that night.
Yeah, that's right.
Manders continued to be over. Manders was over in Nashville, dude.
Yeah, here's something I can say. When I was in the toilet during that match.
Oh, sorry.
This is the Manders one with Jaden. Is this the one you're talking about?
Yep.
And they were building towards Jaden as this big baby face, and Manders is the big bad heel. And I'm hearing it from the toilet, and I'm like, uh-oh, this ain't the reaction I wanted. So you can talk about the match, and I have no idea what they did in the match.
Jaden went over, because they had that storyline. Yeah.
Like, the biggest baby would – he should have been out at the end of the ring with the other six baby faces they had, and add another one to the group and stuff, because he was over.
Jaden went over, and he I mean, with the storyline, it made sense. But if you're reading the crowd, Manders is the guy. And then they came out later and they had Manders match versus Dom, which was really good.
Awesome match.
Really good match, because now they're doing Manders has to win another match to face Jaden. And they're doing kind of the reverse of what they did with the previous storyline. But Manders had an ass beater with Dominic Guarini.
Yeah.
And then the main
strong match. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel really bad because I don't know. I mean, you've been in the building before. Has Manders ever been that over in that building?
No. I think it was a lot of people.
He's always been a heel in that building. I think the traveling fans babyfaced him. And it might have, might have had a little combination of then the other fans went with it. Because, man, yeah, that storyline ended up going almost in smoke with the reaction they got.
Manders has kind of gradually gotten over at SUP, actually. Okay. Everyone kind of, like, appreciates the gimmick.
Okay.
And appreciates what a giant meatsicle of a man he is.
Yes.
But nothing like he got on Sunday. And then by the time he faced Guarini, he was one of the top three most over baby faces they had there.
Yeah, I mean, he got over huge with the fans at SCI Futures. And, I mean, the dude, I put it on Twitter, I thought he was the most underrated. I felt he was not underrated. He was the guy who made the most of his opportunities, because he wasn't on the City card proper. he got on it in a scramble where he didn't even get an entrance on camera. He got to have that great three-way that wasn't slotted in the main event and had a fun main event. Mm-hmm. And then as this banger with Dom, I didn't see how the JD match worked, so I can't comment if that was good or bad. The reaction-wise was bad for how they booked the story. But him and Dom had just an absolute where it almost felt like it was Dom was like Scott Steiner in a way, and Manders was Dr. Death Steve Williams, and it felt really strong with wrestling and power moves, and the timing was great, back and forth action, and that bump Dom takes where Manders picks him up and stampedes his ass into the pole, and Dom then takes the back bump on the ground to boot. And Manders then puts the boots to the back and works the back. It was just really good stuff.
What did you think of the main?
I thought that was fantastic, too. It was, you know, O'Shea and Iceman as the two biggest, baddest, toughest baby faces in the company. And then you have Drake and Henry, who I've already said I think it was the best tag team in the world in the, right now on paper. Maybe I might have the Revival ahead of them, but they're right there.
Yeah.
And they absolutely tear it up. And this is what I'm talking about, the versatility of Henry and Drake, where they are an established tag team, but they're also badasses singles. So this was Texas Tornado rules. And so they're pretty much, both of them are actually working singles matches in this tag team setting. I thought with Henry and, I mean, Iceman strikes, it looked like they would murder somebody. They were so snug, and he can't. That's when I like Bret Iceman the best, is when his strikes come across. Because they come across believable, up in your face, like he feels like the pit bull. You know, it's he buy into everything he is about him. I loved all the interaction with Henry and O'Shea, and I love the fact that we got to see O'Shea now show another side of his character, another side of his wrestling, and he's selling a leg injury that Henry targets throughout the match. I mean, they had some wild spots, but I just love the backbone of the match, and actually watching O'Shea sell, and you know, and it's hard to get sympathy on a big old guy built like a brick shit house, but you know what? It worked, and they were able to, and everything meshed. I really, really enjoyed it. I thought they might have gone a little too long, where I think I would have cut it maybe 2 minutes shorter. That's about all I can really complain about. And I love how AC Mack gets involved post-match, because the guy's a heat magnet, and he's a heat magnet again. Yeah. And so it was just, and then when the baby faces come, Drake and Henry, they're heels, but they believe that they're the best, kind of like Arn and Tully in a way. Yeah. And so they're not powdering. They're going to fight the baby faces until they have to powder. Not AC. He's like that straight up total chicken shit. He's powdering. He left them to lay out way before the rest of the crowd got the rest of the baby faces got out there.
So hello weekend, my friend. Real fun time. Sup was a fun show. Everything was, I mean, we didn't have a bad show.
No, everything worked.
Yeah, everything worked. Everything worked. It was everything made sense. There was, I mean, there wasn't a bad match, really.
Yeah.
You know.
And you know like when me or you or anybody makes some of these critiques, you know, sometimes I mean, people disagree with me, that's fine. But I don't think you can go into a wrestling show and say this is, there's no such flaws. There's no such thing. Everything's going to have a flaw. You're like, oh, this could have worked better. But overall, I thought we got a lot of different varieties, a lot of different style of wrestling. And it was overall a fun experience. I'd recommend to anybody who likes, you know, it felt very, they're big
camaraderie.
There we go.
That's what I'm here for.
With the fans and the wrestlers, and everybody was trying to put on a great show, and it was great. And then none of these shows, here we go, folks. None of these shows went over 3 hours. Right?
There it is, right there. Yep.
I'm not sure about the Crux show, but I know none of the other ones did for sure.
That's
and you what you know what it leaves your fans wanting more. You don't burn them out. I mean, it's like people just need to learn the lesson. You don't need to have 6 hours. I know you know you don't need 6 hour shows. I mean, 3.5. I think is you're pushing it. And then anything after that, that should be shame on you, promoters. You don't need it. But yeah, great, great weekend. Ben, it was great seeing you again as always. We met at WrestleMania a few years back, and we've been shitbirds together ever since.
We have. It was a blast having you. It's a blast having everybody. I hope everybody had a really good time. I hope we can have even more people in Chattanooga next year for Scenic City 2020. Should be an even better time next year. I just had a wonderful time with all of you. Can't just talk enough about the love that was just spread through the whole weekend. I
know like a lot of them have met Papa Hales, but none of you guys have, and probably not many of you, have met Rocky Hales, his brother. It's pretty cool. I think Rocky's a little more handsome, but I'm not sure.
Oh, Rocky Hales, my God. But we had a great time. Great weekend. Favorite weekend of the year. Prove it every single year. And there is a picture of everyone assembled on the bleachers that is probably my favorite picture of any picture I've ever taken, because it's just 75 people having the weekend of their life and all together, all just assembled in one place. And it is my magnum opus because I organized 75 people for one picture. So.
And trust me, he tried this last year. And it failed miserably. So it was great to see Ben get it. And the fact that he almost skipped out on being in the picture is almost like mind blowing. I think if he refused to get in the picture, I think he would become the biggest heel in the thing, because he really is one of the unsung heroes of SCI weekend when it comes to picking people up, making sure they're having a good time, scheduling things. He didn't sweat it like in the past where things wouldn't go quite as well. He realized, man, you know what? This plan can be erased and we can just pencil it in here. He became the cruise director booker of SCI, and that might be tougher than what the booking committee does for SCI weekend. Having to balance 75 egos as opposed to 25. So kudos to Ben, man.
I appreciate it, man. I appreciate it. I love you, Pete. I will hopefully see you soon, and definitely I'll see all of you next year at SCI.
Cool.
All right, man. I'll talk to you soon. On the Place to Be Nation pop feed, Todd Weber brings back whoever has issues in a new pod blast talking about three new Marvel books and how accessible they are to comic fans. This time around is Marvel's Epilogue by Kurt Busiek and Alex Ross, history of the Marvel Universe number 1. From Mark Waid and Javier Rodriguez, the much-hyped House of X, number 1, by Jonathan Hickman and Pape Larraz. Jenny and Tim flipped the script on this edition by talking pop by welcoming multi-show host and multi-talented Andy Atherton for a journey that touches on Andy's ventures as a podcaster, producer, screenwriter, bartender, DJ, and choreographer. The hard-traveling fanboys debut a new, potentially ongoing theme, Fix It or Forget It. Our first of 2010's Jonah Hex, starring Josh Brolin and Megan Fox. Is it salvageable or irredeemable trash? Pop Goes to the Movies with Andy and J.R. Sonny D'Amato to get together to discuss the latest major summer release, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, in a spoiler-filled review. On a new Sunday Groove, David talks his current favorite songs, the new movie Yesterday and the Beatles. Steve and Kelly are back with the new Songs of Friends, diving into Tom Petty's You Don't Know How It Feels and LL Cool J's Hey Lover. The greatest song of the 80s tournament continues. There'll be 6 polls a day posted for round 1. You can end the action on Facebook by searching PTBN Greatest Song of the 80s Tournament and liking the page. Be sure to weigh in. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, I welcome Jay Newman to Row 1, Seat 1. No Holds Barred is back. Aaron and JT return with a GWE PPV TV match ever focused episode. In the latest edition of the Place to Be Nation podcast, JT and Scott D'Amato break down Survivor Series 89. And on the pilot episode of an ECW focused podcast entitled PTB and Extreme Three-Way Dance, JT Rosero, Jennifer Smith, and John D'Amato review the concept of the show and what's to come. On PlaceToBeNation.com, the tribute to 94 is off and running with a brand new look at Woodstock 94, and a piece where JT looks back at Bob Backlund challenging Bret Hart for the WWF title on Superstars. We got Glenn's Weekly Walk as well, and check out our social media pages and message board at biglow34.proboards.com for information on joining our GWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your list. Oh, oh. Oh, oh.
song for the broken hearted.